20 years later, all of a sudden, it quadrupled.
I don't have an agenda.
Where's the contract?
When?
That's true.
You mean for budget?
Yeah.
Well, it'll happen probably the day after we get. Is that what we got?
Will you play a primary election?
I don't know.
What day is it?
No, I'm coming together.
First committee, today is Wednesday, May 1st, 1991. Time is 8:49. We're getting later as the. We do have a quorum and Representatives Moyer, Bruckman, Baker, and Covina. Today we'll be hearing House Bill 195 relating to campaign finance reform, House Bill 298 relating to presidential primary election, HJR 13 relating to a runoff election for the governor and lieutenant governor, and other bills. I intend to hear House Bill 237, which we have heard twice already, and Senate Bill 131, which we've also heard before. But 131 was on a notice of elections, meetings, and regulations, and 237 was state leasing of new buildings. First bill I'd like to take up this morning is House Bill 298. House Bill 298 by Representative Vollmer to establish a presidential primary election in Alaska. I'd like to invite Representative Vollmer to the table. I forgot to put my coat on. I don't look official at all. Representative Vollmer.
Plus, she's already at the table.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 298 would create an early April presidential primary in Alaska. It would not change the existing party system in terms of deciding who will be supported by party people. It is a beauty contest primary in the sense that it is an opportunity for the people of the state to consider and express their opinions on the presidential candidates. Why should we do this? Well, Oregon and Washington have come together to organize a Northwest presidential primary. They have decided that they will hold it, and they basically called up and invited Alaska to join them so that it would be a regional primary. We would do it all at the same time with the idea that we would bring attention to the Northwest and to Northwest issues. We'd attract the presidential candidates to our region and provide an opportunity for them to get to know what concerns us and for us to get to know what they're all about. I don't think it would be viable for Alaska to do it all by itself. I think because of the distance we are away from the population centers and our small population, that it's probably not realistic for us to attract much attention all by ourselves. But in joining Washington and Oregon, I think it does bring a focus to the Northwest and gets us involved in that process in a more meaningful way than we have been to date. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer questions. I think it is a good idea for Alaska. I think it's a good idea for the Northwest. But it's very hard for me to tell you exactly how it would work or what benefits there'd be because we haven't done it before. As you may know, we did pass a bill a number of years ago that would have allowed this to happen, but Alaska never implemented it. So it would be plowing new ground, so to speak, for our state.
So we still have a law in the books that authorizes it?
No, we repealed it.
Why did we repeal it?
Questions from the committee?
I really don't know enough about it. I think there was a concern that we were doing it all by ourselves. It was not in combination with other states. There was concern about the cost and whether or not the amount of money we'd be putting into it would really make that much sense in terms of the benefits to the state. And so it was like one of those ideas that had a temporary halo effect and then very quickly fell off the table because, you know, people couldn't really justify it. And so it never was implemented and went away. And as I said, I don't think if Alaska were considering doing it all by itself, it would make sense. But given the opportunity to kind of buddy up with our sister Northwest states, I think the situation has changed.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Beckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a point of information is that Anchorage is, in '92, will have their local elections on the third Tuesday in April. Remember?
That's right, changed the...
Right.
You guys are going from October to April?
Yeah, it's starting 1992, would be the first year that would occur. That's only one location in the state that I'm aware of. It's the largest location. We draw a lot of people.
Wonder if that'd reduce fiscal level?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's a very good question, and I think there is someone here from the Division of Elections, and I don't know if the Division of Elections was aware of that either. I was not aware of that, and I think that that does add an interesting extra twist to it, because if half of your voters are going to the polls anyway, then it, you know, it does make more sense and probably would reduce the cost. There may be some opportunity there, but I'll defer to the Division of Elections.
To share the cost?
Yeah.
The records show that we've been joined by Representative Choquette at 8:54.
Actually, five.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman.
Apologies accepted, Representative Choquette. Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have fun in this.
Representative Ballmer, the third Tuesday of April is just a mutually agreed upon date by the three states, having no other special significance.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Moyer, as is indicated in the packet, there is a letter from Phil Kiesling, who's the Secretary of State for the state of Oregon, and he and Mr. Monroe, the Secretary of State of Washington, have sort of been negotiating that date, so to speak. And simply because I know both gentlemen from many years gone by, they just picked up the phone and called me and said, what do you think? So I'm not sure at this point if for some reason we might decide we'd rather have it be, for example, the second week as opposed to the third week. I mean, there may be still some room for negotiation, but I think it's more along the lines of we're adding our train car to that train that's already moving.
Well, it is an interesting coincidence that Anchorage is changing to that, and the prospects of saving money are good. With all due respect to Anchorage, it perhaps could skew the election, too, since people are going to the polls anyway in Anchorage. It's just another wild card out there.
Mm-hmm. Never thought about that. They probably definitely have a higher percentage of turnout.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Baker.
It's always been my understanding that the municipal elections and state elections could not be held at the same time, because we've tried that in the past. In fact, we tried to co-opt elections in the past, and we were always told that simply because the systems are very different. And I don't, maybe there's some of the Division of Elections here, but that's one reason that we changed from the fall to the spring, because voters would go in August for a primary, they'd go in October for a municipal election, they'd go back in November. Well, and then if in mayoral year, if they didn't achieve 40%, 3 weeks later they're back voting again, and the first Tuesday in November they're back for the general election. So in the span of 3 months, they would have had to go to the polls four times. So we looked first at trying to co-opt with the state elections, and we were told that that couldn't happen. So I don't know, maybe if someone's from the Division of Elections is here, they could enlighten
explain why.
Well, different different machinery, different computers at work and workers.
Well, you still have a separate ballot that would be.
Two separate.
There must be something else besides that.
Yeah. I don't know, but that was our first attempt when we tried to keep them in the fall.
Representative Ballmer, if you get time, why don't you just
sure.
Come over and let's bring some other people up.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. Representative Choquette?
One quick
Mike
question.
Miller's ankle's still broken.
Representative Ballmer, it's in Kiesling's letter to you, he said that the hearing's not scheduled April 5th. The bill is likely dead this session. Have they scheduled a hearing?
I have not spoken with him in the last week or so I really can't tell you. I'll have to get back to you.
Any other questions for Representative Ballmer?
I might just note, Mr. Chairman, that I will specifically call follow-up, not only get back to you on that, that, but also get back to Representative Moyer's question on how firm the date is and if that's still a moving target and if it looks like it might be some other date. And get back to that. Thank you.
If anyone wants to testify today, please make sure they've signed a register so I don't miss anybody. Elizabeth, you want to join us?
For the record, my name is Elizabeth Ziegler, and I'm Deputy Director of the Division of Elections. The division does not take a position pro or con whether we should have a presidential primary. Our main goal is to put on elections, so if that decision is made, of course, we'll do it. It'll just have a fiscal impact on us. In terms of the question about municipal elections at the same time as a statewide election, I have not researched that issue, but it is my understanding that we loan all of our statewide equipment to municipalities for their local elections. We don't get involved in the clerk's run and have their own set of election rules. But that's the only thing I could see, is that we may have run out of equipment if the municipality is having its election that day.
Representative Ullman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we ask that you go back and consult with the folks and ask whether you all see any way that you could perhaps have the municipality actually run the election, but just run an additional piece of paper, an additional ballot at the same time, so that the Anchorage voters would just have one more piece of paper at the same time. You wouldn't have to run it. They could go ahead and run it, and then it could get merged into the data from the election that would be taking place elsewhere.
I'm sure that we can coordinate our efforts, but the division has to run all statewide elections because of statute. But I'm sure there could be some kind of coordinated effort to work this out.
If you could maybe make a suggestion to us about how
okay.
the most cost-effective way to do that might be.
I think so.
It appears, Mr. Blair, that you're saying that it costs to be around $300,000 in an election year and another $100,000+ in the off years.
No. That's the election year is fiscal year 93. That would be for the 94 election, and it would be $1.2 million.
I'm sorry, yep.
And basically, we went through and did a printout of all of our 90 and 91 primary costs by line item. And then I discussed it with the staff and the election coordinator to see if there would be any differences between running a presidential primary or doing all the things that we do for a regular primary. And essentially, it's the same. You do the same thing, you're just going to back up a few more months, probably into the end of 1993. We would start doing things for the presidential primary.
So, Tim Breckman.
Are there any ballot propositions on primary ballots and questions, different questions? Things other than people and candidates
and
issues.
Well, that brings up an interesting.
And when we, the timeline, the legislature would have to have it.
Could we do constitutional amendments?
At the same time.
At the same time, I believe the Constitution says we have to do them in a statewide general election. I wonder if this would constitute that.
Okay.
In other words, would this give the state an opportunity another time to put things before the people also?
Right, well, what he says.
Is a primary different than a general? I mean, I know it's different. The legal terms.
John, are you leaving?
There's very little.
No, I'll be right back.
Okay.
Very little in statute about the primary election other than saying that it shall be run the same way as the general is run. And So I think that, of course, you should have legal counsel opinion, but you would add that to this bill and broaden the title.
Other questions of the committee? Ms. Seabrook? All right, thank you very much for coming. It's always a pleasure to have you before us.
And I will get you this information very soon.
Sorry. No, I think there are good questions.
That's the jogging process.
That's its best.
And it has occurred to me.
It's an opportunity, I think.
That's passed 2 years ago, and we wait till the site came out.
Right, and then we've been the site.
Yeah, I don't want to. I think we'll wait and get a few answers back.
When would be the first time that you would envision this happening? Next year.
If we could get our act together.
So the only way that would be possible is to pass this out this year.
Well, again, that might be a question for the Division of Elections.
John, could you join us?
Sure. Startup time they really need to
I
be able
to that
yeah.
Well, I mean, you think about it, because it'd be next April.
Right.
Yeah, next April would be.
So even if we came in January, there's no way.
So we have to vote absentee.
How much startup time do you need?
Oh, well, okay. We've been working since January on our October REAA and CRSA elections. You need at least 6 months to order up your ballot stock and have things like that put together for all your forms and things like that. It takes a little slow. You always back up at least 6 months.
Would they do it in a week, or would it be 3 states together, or each state separate?
They need to do it separately.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They just coordinate their time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just for forms. And then we would have to go educate our election workers on this a bit.
Mr. Gagin, would you state your name and position for the record?
I'm John Gagin. I'm Legislative Counsel, Employed in Legal Services Division.
Would you counsel us on this bill, Mr. Gagin?
Which bill?
We're talking about 298 still.
298, I don't know what to add that Representative Ulmer didn't describe already. It's a beauty contest bill. It's not binding on the parties, mainly because there was a 1981 U.S. Supreme Court decision that said that if a party rule conflicts with a state law, the party rule governs. And it actually involved a situation very similar to what we have in Alaska. Wisconsin has an open primary. It's not the blanket primary we have here, but it's open to other than registered Democrats. The Democratic Party rules said that only registered Democrats could take part in the delegate selection process. And when there was a conflict between, the Wisconsin law said that the results of the primary were binding on the delegates. The party went to court, the party won. The repealed primary that Representative Ulmer referred to also had the same provision in it. It said that the results were binding on the delegates, and that would not have withstood scrutiny under the Wisconsin case. This bill differs slightly from the other bill. The old bill was said that the lieutenant governor picked the candidates who were generally recognized to be the contenders. This one actually requires that a candidate take a step to it's either a candidate who's officially declared or it's a candidate who, if the candidate supporters put the candidate's name on the ballot through a petition. So let's say in the case of somebody like Mario Cuomo in 1988, he would have been on the ballot under the old law. He wouldn't be on the ballot under this law unless his supporters got 5,000 people to put him on the election. As I said, the results are non-binding, so all it is, it's a purely advisory bill as to how the people of Alaska feel. And essentially, that's about it.
Thank you. you have, if this was to be law, could you put other issues before the people at the same time? Example, constitutional amendments, where it says, the Constitution says they have to be done in a statewide, I'm not sure the language exactly.
I'm not sure the language either, but I think the answer is no. I think it says a primary or a general, and
I think
my recollection is that primary is defined as a state primary election. I don't think this would fall under that category.
What was the other question we had?
The other question related just to the division of elections and consolidating municipal and state.
Any question? All right, thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Pleasure of the committee. Representative Ulmer, I think there's some questions to this. If you think that it's something that you actually are going to try to get done in the next 2.5 weeks, I would grant you moving the bill, but if you think that's unrealistic, maybe we would wait and then hold them. But I would leave it. I don't want to be the cause of something that you're trying to get done this year to be delayed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate that. I think the question related to whether or not it could be combined with the municipal election goes to the issue of the fiscal note. Mm-hmm. So I suppose that data could be analyzed by the Finance Committee, and it's actually that, I suppose, that committee that's going to have to decide whether the cost is worth it. I would say that if this committee feels from the standpoint of the policy regarding elections that it is a good idea or one worth pursuing, that if I would appreciate it, you're moving it out.
Anybody?
I'd be glad to make a motion, Mr. Chairman.
I'll accept it.
I move to the report from Committee House Bill 298 with no CS for individual recommendations and ask the unanimous consent.
No objection. 298 is moved.
Thank you very much.
Do you have a few minutes? Would you like to comment on HR 13? The runoff?
Yes.
The runoff?
It's your bill.
The runoff election?
Oh, the runoff election. Oh, well, sure.
Well, just let me bring that before us and then you can.
Go ahead.
The next bill before us is HDR 13, proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska, requiring that candidates for governor and lieutenant governor receive 40% of the votes cast to be elected, and changing the term of the office of the governor and lieutenant governor. HDR 13, proposing amendment to the Constitution, requires a candidate for governor and lieutenant governor to receive at least 40% of the vote to be elected. This time, our Constitution doesn't require a majority vote to elect a governor. However, I feel it's important that people chosen to head out of state government be approved by a significant number of eligible voters. Our electoral system should provide the public with some assurance that their elected governor and lieutenant governor represent something close to a majority of the voters. Over the past 20 years, no gubernatorial candidate has won office with more than 50% of the vote. In fact, I believe only once has anybody won 50% of the vote. Based on this, I feel that a 40% plurality, which is a provision of municipal elections in Anchorage, is a reasonable and realistic electoral requirement. The only reason I bring this up is because we had the other one. I do not plan on moving this bill. And it is a constitutional amendment, which we have not moved out any of them, and we will have hearings on them in the fall. But I thought it might be, since we were talking about this one, a good time to hear a little bit of about this one. And with that, Representative Ulmer, if you'd like to make any comments, because we've talked about it before.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason I support HJR 13 and feel that it's an important thing to do is because of how powerful the governor of the state of Alaska is. In our Constitution, we give to the governor the kind of authority that is shared responsibility in most other states, shared with other statewide elected offices, whether it's, the transportation responsibilities or health and social services responsibilities. When you look at other states and see how many of what but our commissioners are separately elected statewide offices. You see how we have really consolidated the power in one person. For a variety of reasons, you can argue that good or bad, but the point is, I think when you have a state that puts that much power in one person, it's really important that that person reflect a large number of voters and the wishes of a large number of voters. And you can envision a situation in Alaska, given what our rulings have been in terms of variety of parties that can put candidates on the ballot, of someone being elected with maybe 25% or less. If you have enough parties and enough people running, you can have someone win with a very, very small mandate. And that concerns me, given the amount of power that that person has. So I think in order to have credibility in the institution, we have to require some minimum threshold. And, you know, whether that's 50%, which is a pretty high threshold, or whether it's 40%, or whether it's 45%, I mean, I don't think there's a particular magic to the number. The 40% makes as much sense as any. I guess the mayor of Anchorage is required to do the runoff at 40, probably for similar reasons. You want your chief elected officer to have a firm foundation in terms of support of the public. So I do support HJR 13. I think it's very important in this state to have at least 40% of the people who have voted feel that that person is the right person to vest that much power in.
Mr. Chairman,
on statement Title 29 Anchorage Municipal Charter is incorrect in that it is the mayor that has the runoff, but they repealed, the voters repealed the rest of the municipal government assembly, the school board, for instance. So it is just now down to the mayor. And it's an important item in Anchorage, very important that we elect the person who is, has majority of votes. And there's a lot of discussion about bringing back the other bodies to the school board. It's an expensive item when everyone has to have a runoff. Just a point of information that this should be updated.
Representative
Mr. Chairman, I think, you know, I think it, this is probably pretty good legislation because we found that well, literally, you're going to have a runoff. I mean, there's no if, ands, or buts about it. You will have a runoff. The only question I would have is timing. In Anchorage, for example, it's, the charter stipulates that it will be 3 weeks following the election. So, do you perceive that this would be somewhat along the same line, or a month later? Because you then involve yourself in basically two campaigns, and you have to allow time, and you know, and our Constitution stipulates when the governor shall take office. If the general election would be the first Tuesday in November, and traditionally he takes office on December the 3rd, I believe it is, the transition time and everything, there may be some logistics here that you need to think about, because if you do have to allow go through another campaign cycle between the general and runoff.
Yeah, if you notice on the first section, section one there of our bill, that we said the runoff would be 45 days, within 45 days. I'm not sure that's a good number or not. That's a number that we put in just to start the debate on. And also, because of that, we had to change in section two down there, that he would take office on the first Monday of January rather than December. And if that would only be necessary if there was a runoff, but I guess you gotta keep it consistent. So that actually creates a problem too when the governor needs to have a budget before us.
That's right.
But you can see that even the new governor with that extra month really didn't have time to put together his own budget, or at least excuse that it wasn't his own budget or something, but I think you're going to have that problem.
That could be New Year's Eve.
Oh, we're going to move it out. Yes, we did. Whoa.
She's a powerful lady.
She is.
Brett Semler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, in Arizona, they changed their law after the... Oh, I suddenly forgot.
forgot the governor's
address. Yeah, the Meacham incident.
To 50% plus one. And sure enough, they had two substantial candidates and a very minor third-party candidate, and it ended in a 49-point-something for each of them. In other words, the third-party candidate, I don't think, got 1% or a little more. And they threw themselves into a terrible second campaign just because of that 1%. And I understand they're considering changing their laws so that something to the effect that if the third-party candidate doesn't get at least a certain percent, then they would waive the 50% requirement so that, indeed, in that case, it just would have gone to whoever got more votes closer to 50. They didn't want to throw their race into a conundrum just because someone came in at 1%. And I don't know if we could consider something like that to, in this bill, 40%, unless the third party, well, you'd have 20% left and to divvy up either between 1, 2, 3, who knows how many, but if they all got, I don't know, 6% or something, just to throw it out as an idea, that's the problem you run into when you start making requirements, and they ran into that quickly in Arizona. They didn't. Yeah.
In the phone calls we made, in the correspondence, we found that the states that have the 50% requirement don't like it. It's too close too often. Mm-hmm. And of course, here we got only a 40%. So if you had two candidates right under 40%, somebody else has taken more than 20% of the vote. So you probably got a lot better. I mean, you're going to have a lot more spread there.
It depends on how many are running. If you had two at 39 and then five people split up the rest of a small percent, that's goofy to go to a runoff.
It is. Why? Which of the two that are at 39 percent do you pick? The one that has one more vote than the other?
Yeah.
See, I disagree with that. I think that's exactly the reason for the runoff. You still have the problem that you're electing a governor with us, the most powerful person in the state by nowhere near a majority of the voters. Representative Chopin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think that. I think that the Green Party is going to grow in Alaska. I think that when we take into consideration a runoff election, we can't say that it's going to be a 1% type of thing anymore. I think it's going to be a substantial percentage. I like the 40%.
I don't think the Green Party is going to grow at all. No more than the Libertarian Party did myself. Those are just differences.
Well, that's accepted as such.
All right, would the divisions of elections like to come up and comment?
I'm never going to be late again. I'll tell you right now.
Only 6 minutes left.
My name is Elizabeth Ziegler, Deputy Director of the Division of Elections. As before, we don't take a position pro or con on the bill. We will implement whatever is necessary. I know what the legislature desires. I also echo Representative Baker's concerns about the timing. And actually, we would have to put on another general type election within a short period of time. And there would be cost involved similar to a general election. The only thing that I could see that would lower the cost would be less printing and ballot cost. Usually when you have a general, you have 3 or 4 ballot cards and then that type of printing cost. So that would be less. After the runoff election, that race would have to be certified by the State Review Board, and that would add a couple more weeks on the process, we're talking timing. And then there's a statute that deals with election contest, and that allows a person 10 days after election is certified to appeal to Superior Court. Mm-hmm. So that would be another 10 days that should be added on to the process. So I don't know if the governor could take office in early January then.
Do you have a suggestion on different timelines? If you don't now, and this bill, we're not moving this bill out, and, but I would like recommendations on timelines that we will move this bill early next session. We will have hearings on it in the interim. And if you have any better way of doing it, but let's take it from the assumption that we are going to require 40% or something thereabout. How would be the best way to do it in your opinion?
Okay.
That's from your point of view. I do note that Commissioner Keller, we brought this up in confirmation hearings, supported this idea. He thought it was a good idea, and I mentioned to him that one of the governor's people, after I introduced it, came down and made some little comments that it was because of this, just because of this governor, and the bill wouldn't go anywhere. And he's said something to the effect of, well, you know, when people start thinking about things logically, they may not always stick with those ideas. That might have been an initial reaction. And so I don't know. Would the does the lieutenant governor himself have a position on this, or do?
No.
And you and Division of Elections have a position in itself, other than technicalities of how you would do it?
No. We would just implement the process. We do not take political or policy decisions on these things. That's up to you. We're eager to put on elections.
Well, that was a good statement, Mr.
Yeah,
Chairman.
Yeah, it was. And the 2.2 in your fiscal note.
That is basically the cost of
printing. So what you'd have to do is assume if it happened at that time, and it'd be kind of an iffy thing. If it happened, you would have
a large supplemental.
Yeah, something. And probably what? Say $500,000?
No, our budget for a general, the big general primary year, is $3.2 million. A primary cost about $1.2 million. So
okay,
well,
this
general
would
about a $2 million.
This would obviously be, I would think, quite a bit less than, I mean, because you're not going to have, all you're going to have is one notice going out, and this, and just the reprinting of the ballots, and the...
That's an interesting point, because the, what I found from researching everything, is the printing of the ballots is the most hassle. And getting the card stock, having the printer do it, making sure that everything is punched correctly. This is hang out in Anchorage for a week and a half, watching the process to make sure it's all going right. That kind of thing. So, I mean, if there's a sticking point, a practical sticking point, other than timing, it's going to be the turnaround on getting those ballots done.
Representative Baker?
Mr. Chairman, what we do in Anchorage on the runoff is rather than to use the computerized ballot, we use just the printed paper ballot, and actually do runoff elections by hand count, the old-fashioned way. And actually, they come out a lot quicker than they do on the computer.
Right.
And so our runoff elections, because there's just one item on the ballot, and that's
it. Just divide the pile up.
And they, we'll always have the election returns from runoff elections within 45 minutes to an hour after the poll closes versus 3 or 4 hours, because there isn't, there just is no other candidates on the ballot, period.
Right.
Generally better anyway.
So I think, I don't even know if that would fit into the state system, but otherwise, we could never get the ballots printed.
Right.
The
that would probably
stock.
Be the case with us, too.
Right.
I mean, you can't have that kind of turnaround.
The telephone number.
Well, we'll do, I know we have some quite a bit of information on how other states do it. If other states can get a ballot printed, I'm sure we can get a ballot printed. So,
locally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With recycled Alaskan paper. Representative Bruckman?
Thank you. I'm pleased you mentioned January date, because I was very concerned about the first Monday of January. But there is another piece of legislation going through that would change specified time certain that the legislature starts each year. That might be coordinated with this, the Division of Elections, except at dates, you might consider that bill. My question, though, would pertain to, this just speaks to the governor. Shouldn't it speak governor and lieutenant governor, since this is, or as I believe...
Actually, I think we really, John could probably speak to that, but I think we're really only electing the governor.
And the other guy just, or girl just...
The other guy just sort of tags on the ballot.
They run as a team.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
But the Constitution, I think, speaks to...
To governor, not to...
I think, we'll look into that, too, but if it's, if the governor and lieutenant governor is worded right, but I think it is...
The Constitution talks about the governor, then there's a later section that talks about the lieutenant governor, who says they run as a team.
So it's, this is, I mean, this is...
This is amending the section of the Constitution that just relates to the gubernatorial election.
And then, under lieutenant governor, it just says he tags along.
Okay.
No offense to your boss up there.
Right.
All right, anything else from elections? That will, we would like you to look at the technicalities on that, because, so you're forewarned, so that when we do have hearings around in the interim, that we're ready to go.
Okay.
With it. Okay. Is there anybody else who wants to say anything on this? I don't want to spend any more time on it. No? Thank you.
Thank you.
The next bill before the committee is House Bill 195 by Representative Finkelstein, an act relating to election campaigns, regulation of lobbying, conflicts of interest, and the Alaska Public Relations Commission. Representative Finkelstein. My intent on this bill today is to give it a brief overview from Representative Finkelstein to put this bill in a subcommittee of the whole committee and to find some time, other than committee time, work session time, to go over this bill in detail and debate, and then bring the bill back before us. Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's two ways I could go through it. I could go through it section by section. What that covers is both major substantive changes plus the smaller changes made to help APOC streamline its efforts. This bill includes both changes made that are attempts to reform the system, plus changes made that were requested or proposed by APOC to improve the efficiency of the system. I don't know what your preference is, whether you'd have rather have a longer version or a shorter version of what the bill does.
Finkelstein, I would like a short one today.
Short. Okay.
And what we want to do is, I'd like to move out a couple other bills that we've already heard before to give us kind of an overview, and then I'd like to see if we can find a time that we can really all sit down in a more informal setting and look at what the bill really does.
Okay, that'd be...
You all should have this memo from Representative Finkelstein, too, at the top of your packet.
So just going through the bill, I'll only talk about the major things. The first one's on page 2, the disbursement of campaign accounts. Basically, this changes the status quo and limits what you can use excess campaign funds for. You wouldn't be able to take it as personal income anymore. You could use it for thank you parties, victory parties. You could retire loans. You can return it to contributors. You can give it to the general fund. You can give it to charities. Or you can transfer limited amounts to new campaign accounts for another office. Then at the bottom of page 2 is another important section, prohibited campaign activities by lobbyists. These are all sections that were in the ethics bill that have been since moved to the moved to this bill. The idea with this section, section 075, is to restrict lobbyists from direct involvement in fundraising and campaigns. They can still contribute their own money, but they couldn't be active fundraisers for candidates. Then 077 relates to trying to restrict the use of public funds to influence elections. That's happening to some degree at the administrative level. Then next major change is on 104 on page 4.
So this bill would where the last bill we did, the ethics bill, just dealt with the legislature, this would deal with all candidates.
That's the intent there. I'm not sure every bit of it's consistent with that intent, but that's the intent. The time limitations on fundraising for candidates on page 4, section 104 here, the campaign season would be defined to begin June 1st of the year before the election and run through the election itself with no fundraising during legislative sessions. It's basically, so it'd be one session during which fundraising is limited. But the other change would be no fundraising after elections are over, until you file for your next election. Then, section 125 on page 6 is one of the minor ones, but it's a little more significant. It allows APOC to use civil penalties in areas now where they're only able to use criminal penalties and aren't able to enforce the law very well because of it. And that is about it. There is a variety of other provisions, but they're smaller ones aimed at allowing APOC to make their efforts more efficient. Any questions on any of those?
Okay, so this is really a third part of a what I considered a three-part bill, and when we dealt with the ethics bill, and a bill that I was committed to take up before the committee. Representative Chilcat?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Finkelstein.
I'd have to go find this to see if we remain consistent. The standard we used was if, unless a candidate didn't know about it, unless it occurred by somebody else, that you couldn't use campaign funds. I agree that if it's a case that the campaign, others make mistakes in the campaign, that the campaign ought to pay. But it isn't much of a penalty on a candidate if it just comes out of the campaign funds. I don't have any strong feelings on that particular one. The important part of this section is that the that there be some penalties. Right now, for most of these violations, there are no civil penalties. All they can do is take you to court and you know, try on a criminal penalty, which of course isn't appropriate or realistic. So they say, I do think you have a good point. I'm not wedded to the idea of taking it out of the candidate's pocket.
It's not so much that, Mr. Chairman. I'll make continuance. Some of us don't have a dollar in the bank. This type of an assumption that, I guess that's one of the biggest problems I have, Mr. Chairman, with the campaign reform, is that there's some real good people out there that would like to run for office. They can't afford to run for office. Can't afford the $22,000 a year. I know you hear another day, another 50 cents.
I represent that remark.
He represents it. Yes. My concern, David, aren't we focusing by this particular part of the legislation, aren't we focusing in on a limited number of people? I can't imagine any of us here doing anything to violate disclosure laws and intentionally. In the same respect, I know for a fact I could not have paid some of the fines I've heard about that have come across without using campaign money.
Right. Well, I guess, like I said, Representative Choquette, I'm not particularly wedded to this section. The idea is to try to link it to who made the mistake, but I don't think it's a particularly important provision. I think you make a good point. But on the point of encouraging people to run for office, this bill, other provisions of this bill, I think are very important. That there's huge disincentives right now in the system we have to getting people to run for office. Number one is a variety of candidates, including myself in the past, have carried forward surpluses from one campaign to another of the scale of which discourages effective competition. If you've got $100,000 and you move it forward as your fund from one campaign to another, who's going to run against you? I mean, it's on the congressional level, it's virtually out of control that way. By the time the challengers file, they're $1 million behind, and it makes it very hard. We have a situation here where incumbents generally win. We had one incumbent lose in the 88 primary, and I think one incumbent lose in the 90 general, and that's it. So a couple of incumbents ran against each other, so it's inevitable then. The challengers virtually never beat the incumbents, and it's the same at the congressional level. You got a better chance of dying in office than losing as an incumbent. So.
Mr. Chairman, I like the bill. That's my only concern.
Representative Baker, we only have a few minutes, so.
Yeah. Just a quick question, David. Is it envisioned then with this legislation that if a person has a carry forward balance, that they would have to give it to charity, or they cannot transfer more than $5,000 effective the date of passage of this? Is that correct? I think that's a good idea.
That would be correct. And I think the numbers
today. I mean, if a person has $100,000 in the bank, he best. Be spending it real quick, because
I don't think too many of us have to.
Well, the effective date, and that is correct, Representative Baker. The effective date would inevitably, in the end, whenever something like this gets passed, would be quite a ways away, and the use of funds will still allow some uses, and there's plenty of room in this kind of thing for compromise. While you could increase the amount of money that you pass forward, that was just a guess as to what the right level was. Other levels are just as appropriate. You could allow putting some limited funds into your personal office account. All those things are, are compromises that can make sense with this.
Representative Moore?
And just to clarify, Representative Finkelstein, it would not preclude you from paying back debts to your...
No, not at all.
Representative Bruckman, did you have any comments?
I want about the amendment, that's an answer. Thank you.
All right, well, David, why don't you and I get together today and see if we can come up with a time that we can sit down and have a real meeting on it, okay? We will do that shortly. I'd like to bring up next Senate Bill 131. Senate Bill 131 by Senator Duckman, an act relating to notice requirements for the adoption, amendment, or repeal of regulations for the meeting of public agencies. We had this bill before us. There was an amendment. I'm trying to think, Mary. Had we accepted this amendment?
No.
I don't think we voted on the amendment, did we?
We went out to get a wording for it.
This one about, in addition to other information required, they got a print on the regulations that the Lieutenant Governor can't.
That was the radio disclosure or something.
With no amendment before us, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Shulkin.
I would move that we move SB 131 out of committee, individual recommendations, and ask for unanimous consent.
There is a motion to move CS for Senate Bill 131, finance amended, out of committee with individual recommendations. Are there objections to moving the bill? Seeing no objections, CS for Senate Bill 131, finance amended, is moved to state for individual recommendations. Representative Bruckman?
No, didn't we include the amendment?
No.
No, we didn't?
No, the amendment is not taken up, and so that people know what's happening, we have another bill we're going to put that amendment on.
It's going to judiciary.
We have a governor's bill instead of messing with the senator.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I'd like to bring up House Bill 237, that House Transportation Committee, an act establishing certain criteria that must be considered when state agency leases involve the construction of new buildings. We've had this bill before, it's, I believe, twice. I'm still not satisfied, and actually, and I think we still need a...
Well, do we need to accept the CES? I move that adopt the CES for House Bill number 237 to the fair.
Do we have a CS already before us, or no?
Max has got one, Mr. Chairman.
No, not that CS. That was not adopted.
And are you talking about the 42391 CS, Representative Buckman?
Yeah, I assume this was what came back when we said, yeah, with the changes on current buildings.
Yeah, the current buildings is in here.
Yeah.
Structure of the new buildings.
All right, the wording that is not in here that we talked about is probably on the second page when we talked about that when they're evaluating these proposals for lease, that they also take into consideration whether it would be more cost effective to build to own, in other words, build it themselves rather than leasing the building. And I believe that we all thought that was something good to have in there too. And I
yes.
think if we agree, I'd like to have that part of the CS. Does anybody object to that?
Mr. Chairman, did we use the word look at the life cycle cost to describe that? Was that, that's my notes have that, look at the life cycle cost.
Right, we have that.
And, oh, that's been put in, yes.
That's in here under D. And then right there, in this D, lines 5, 6, and 7, we would want something to say, and the cost of constructing to own or something to also be evaluated. Is that any problem with that, anybody?
No, I would move that amendment.
Okay. Anything else on this one, Ned? Is there any reason not to let it go? Representative Choquette?
No, Mr. Chairman. I would make a motion that we move HB 237 out of committee with individual recommendations as per unanimous consent.
There is a motion to move a committee substitute for House Bill 237, State Affairs, as amended. Are there objections? There are no objections. That is moved. Don't send that on until I see the copy. We have two nominations before us that I believe we need to hear. We have to have them recommendations to the speaker by Wednesday, which is the 8th. So I have scheduled Jack Anderson for APLC and James Hamilton for Human Rights Commission for Tuesday, May 7th. That's next Tuesday at 8:30 in the morning. Is that a time that's not appropriate for people?
We have much.
It's not the time, Mr. Chairman.
Well, sometimes we get in tough situations and we gotta deal with them.
It's okay with me. We have caucus at 10.
Yeah. The only other alternative I had was putting them at the end of Keller's, and I thought, why confuse them?
Why not, though?
That'll be a long
time. We don't know until 11.
No.
Keller's not going to be that long.
Well, what have they said? Have you contacted them? So we have not contacted them yet. If you guys would rather try to add it on Monday.
How about if we try for it? If we don't, then get the usage test.
Would you like that better?
I'd just as soon get it all out of the way, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me.
It's going to be a fun Monday.
Excuse me, but
What do you want to ruin 2 days for?
Does next, I know that one of these weeks that the Monday sessions will be starting at 10 o'clock.
Next week, I think.
Is it next week?
I don't know if that's for sure. It's another thing to check out.
Okay. If that was one of the other reasons why I said the Tuesday.
Mr. Chairman, could maybe, I know this isn't real popular, but could maybe move it back to 8 o'clock on Monday morning?
That's my idea.
Well, we already have Millet going to be here at 8:30. And I'm assuming, you know, depending on everybody here, but I don't think Millet's going to take 2.5 hours.
He isn't going to take.
So let's say if we gave him an hour and then we had even these guys, whether they're great or whether they have major problems, we should be able to get to the heart of it without hours of questioning, don't you think?
We only have a half hour for both of them.
That'd be good enough.
If we meet at 10, otherwise it sounds good. We meet at 11.
All right, well, we'll let you know before the day's out. That'll be one of those two, okay? We only have 6 more meetings, so we have some hot bills. We had is there anything else? Let me read this. Next meeting of House State Affairs will be Friday, May 3rd. There we'll have 251 relating to debt retirement fund, House Bill 252, appropriation for debt retirement. These are governor's bills, by the way. H.J.R. 38 relating to constitutional debt retirement fund. We're adjourned. 9:50.